Fleming Rutledge was one of the first women ordained to the priesthood in the Episcopal Church 40 years ago. She's now retired, but continues to be known for her theological writings and her deft preaching, and for her courage and pioneering spirit that helped break a glass ceiling and changed our world forever. I read this past week a reflection of hers in which she said, "The best Christmas card I ever received came in 1968 from the Catholic Interracial Council of the Twin Cities." I'm presuming that she had given some money to them at some point, got on their mailing list. We know how that works, right? But the front of this Christmas card was colorful and bright, with hues of red and orange radiating diagonally across the card, a vibrant sunrise paired with the first half of a verse from the Benedictus, one of our ancient and beautiful and beloved canticles. The front of the card with that sunrise read at the bottom, "From on high, our God will bring the rising sun." And then she opens the card to find a simple, stark, black and white photo of a small African-American child sitting listlessly in the shadows of a slum courtyard with just a single ray of sunshine streaking into his small orbit, with the second half of that verse from the Benedictus, "To give light to those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death." Fleming says the contrast between the front cover and the inside of the card startled her, stopped her short, as it would any of us. But it paused, gave me pause to consider how Advent remarkably holds these two faces in tension. The rest of that verse from the Benedictus, in slightly different translation, the one we have in our prayer book, goes like this: "In the tender compassion of our God, the dawn from on high shall break upon us to shine on those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death, and to guide our feet into the way of peace." There it is, folks. Advent. Advent does not shy away from the fact that our reality is not as God intended. Children are sitting in darkness and the shadow of death. And yet, at the same time, we lean into this expectant hope that God is breaking into the world, into our world, in new and remarkably healing ways. And we are to watch for it and respond to it. Now, you may also have noticed that Advent brings a lot of talk about sin. I know, that's a bad word these days. None of us like it. It's okay if you don't. Even our collect today launches a plea to God, "Because we are sorely hindered by our sins, O Lord, let your bountiful grace and mercy speedily help and deliver us." It's enough to stir us up, all right, but not in a good way. But Fleming Rutledge, in her latest book, offers this remarkable reflection on the nature of sin, which she says is so often misunderstood when it is used to judge others, those sinners, or when we feel the projection of judgment placed on us. We miss the point when sin is externalized in either direction. Rutledge suggests that sin is a weighty theological term. It needs to be unpacked. It's a term of incompletion, of brokenness, of missing the mark. But it can only be understood in reference to God's prevailing mercy and steadfast love for us. And here's the remarkable point. Fleming suggests, when one becomes aware that they are trapped by sin, of being sorely hindered by sin, in that moment, they'd also discover that they are delivered from that sin by the mercy and steadfast love of God. They go together. It is radically liberating good news because it is always referential to God's prevailing delight in shining mercy and love into the darkness of our lives, the darkness of our world. And ironically, it becomes a cause for rejoicing. This is our third Sunday of Advent, traditionally known as Gaudete Sunday, literally the Latin, Rejoice Sunday, an imperative, rejoice. It's also known as Rose Sunday. We light our rose-colored candle. The readings, the hymns, all of our prayers draw on this theme this day of hopeful turning into God's restorative justice and peace without ever forgetting the downtrodden or the brokenhearted. So Isaiah's poetic thrill that we just heard, or the Psalms' sonnet of delight, they invite us into a lyrical joy without denying the lamentable suffering that has been experienced and still lingers all too much in our time. And then we hear from John the Baptist once more. Now, I know John the Baptist would not ever be on any of our invitees lists for a fun dinner party. But with courage and pioneering spirit, you see, he stood squarely between two worlds, the world of the oppressed and the world of the oppressor, and spoke the truth to both, using, of all things, apocalyptic language. It got him killed. But he remained true to his calling throughout, and the world changed forever as a result. The pattern is there, friends. It's quite a remarkable thing that 2 weeks ago in the announcements in this place on Sunday morning, 2 weeks ago, I mentioned that 1 in 4 children at nearby Lowell Elementary are homeless. Over 100 of the 400 kids there. Breaks our hearts. We decided that we would gather food for them. They invited us to. And we would gather gifts for them, along with those at Mary's Place and those who benefit from the work of Casa Latina. The response was overwhelming. In one day, you all picked up 110 gift tags and returned those gifts, which had been delivered, along with 3 carloads full of food, hundreds and hundreds of pounds, so that those children and their families might have something to eat during their Christmas break from school. I thank you for your generosity. It is heartwarming to see. But let's not leave it at the level of one-offs, however well-intended. Let's think in transformative terms, because that's what God is inviting us into. I know many of you already are in so many ways. If you find joy in giving, then I'd say you are already living headlong into this Gaudete Sunday, this rejoicing Sunday. We rejoice because we can orient to the promise that God is up to something here in the midst of dark times and is inviting us to join God in that divine inbreaking, so that those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death might experience the good news and might just have their broken hearts bound up. Of course, one gift or a can of soup won't win the day, but maybe it can be a bit of that oil of gladness about which Isaiah spoke, that oil of gladness. And perhaps the place God is calling you to is where your deep gladness meets the world's hunger. Will you go there? What will you discover if you do? I might suggest that we all have much to discover about ourselves in the process. And engaging in that work will surely change our world, our lives, the world. Yes, it's a harder row to hoe, but this season of Advent, with its readings and hymns and patient persistence to see the world through God's eyes, as broken yet beloved, as reeling yet redeemable, and always tethered to an arc of divine hope, this season of Advent stands squarely in critique of sentimentality, the sort that makes Christmas little more than saccharine sweet pretending that everything is okay in our world, at least for a day. Let's resist that and hold the tension. Rejoice while holding the downhearted and brokenhearted. Advent defies such shallow toe dipping and invites us to dive headlong into the paradoxical and unsettled tension of embracing the world's suffering, even while we rejoice that God is up to something here and now. And so, my friends, I bid you hold this season, this space of Advent, with great intention. Live in the paradoxical reality of now and not yet, of waiting yet hastening, of judgment and deliverance, of sin's sore hindrance and God's goodness and mercy, of suffering and joy. And know that if you do, if you will hold this space, the tender compassion of our God will break into your life and into this world as a new dawn, dispersing the darkness. And our world will never be the same.